nest of the swan's bones, high in the blue air above the dumpster in the back lane, between the mountains and the tidal flats. On the thermals and updrafts, a summer hawk does slow turns. The crows pick at the waste on the asphalt. The men push jingling shopping carts, or stand and mimic life in a prison yard. The wild white swan is dead. Where I caught trout as a child, no trout swim now. The drives and crescents gouge ravines, make creeks disappear. Where wild baby fish run, they run gauntlets of penfish, are eaten alive, eyes popping out as sea lice eat right through their heads. The hawk dances, circles, dances. Its shadow flits unnoticed across men, spreads over a rodent or bird it dives to, inserts claws into, and clamps large feet on, stomping it as if beating time. It splays flesh and flies away with it into the sunlight. The hawk takes up an owl's hoot and a sparrow's last chirp, a heron's bill snap and a smelt's silence into its disinterested scream. The swan glides in beauty in the hawk's sight and fills all the hawk sees with brilliant, blinding whiteness. Moment by moment, the men go back and forth. They search out what they trade for a full bottle or syringe or pipe. In my room with the lit-up screen, I lie and dream my dream. I feel it must also be God's, this dream of the person of persons. Where the dream comes through, it punctures me, and I breathe dark air. The air thuds into pockets like a plummeted elevator. O monster home, O specialty wine outlet, O auto mall. The wild white swan is dead. The hawk hunts and kills the swan for love. It will build a new nest of the swan's bones. It will keep this nest unseen. I am a person. I soil the cage in which my heart flings and flings itself against the bars. I try to own the view of every murderer. And yet I try to sing the way out through the hawk's claw holes to the repose in the nest of fire at the tip of the hawk's wing. Excuse me. This bloody wind, cold winter wind. I'm just not used to it. Foot of St. George's Avenue. The boxcars couple, they shunt into the rail yard. Their wheels cry all night, they play. The late work at the dry dock beneath the hull-filled vault, at the grain elevator, at the shipping terminal where the freighters lie up against the pier and the tall cranes lift flood-lit containers, at the crossing where I chewed car-spilled grain and made a rough gum, is play. No one sees beyond what he sees when he runs, swings, screams. No one knows more than a child knows. A boy will look up, call for a father to put a crashed electric locomotive back on its perfect circle of rails. He will see no one and leave the room to look up the rest of his life. The tracks laid down along the pale insides of a man's arms gauge the same loneliness. The train makes its pass the way his blood makes its pass. In the festering, he will focus on it. In the hole he tears, he will find it. The one thing that is real, and any memory kill. The slamming of boxcars into a vein. Now he can go anywhere he wants in the night. The train will take him. The switching will never stop. below the city block where my balcony hangs and the avenue ends. The work keeps on. I don't know. I don't know how it is that paradise is so wide, the junction in the head so narrow. If you shut your eyes in the dark behind them, you will watch while eyes are riveted into you. If you listen to the coupling, crying, clanging, continue down through you, it will become a chant. And that chant, what you know. And whatever you are will be forsaken, then finished. The sleep you crave yet fear will come. The sounds and lights die into what rises within you. A ferry sits in fittings. A freighter rests, its deck loaded. Boxcars stand still, ready to be hooked up again. What you dream, what transpires while you lie there, is the beginning of the day you will wake to. A world assembling itself, both workshop and toy. A Christ entering metal, never to return. I guess I'll read two more if that's all right. My father was an architect, drank and drugged himself to death before he was 40. I like to refer to him as a casualty of the 70s whenever I refer to him. In his early and mid-20s, I guess, he worked for a little while for his own father, who had a couple of factories that produced whatever they produce in these kinds of factories, things out of metal, I don't know. One day or one evening, he showed up with a whole bunch of beds that he had made in one of his father's factories. And that's what this poem is about. It's called Aluminum Beds. When he pulls up in a truck and hefts new beds into the house to replace our camp cots, we see the dark in a metal's dull sheen is the dark displayed in his beard. The sound rushing through the hollows of the square posts, the frames, guards, and rails is the sound rushing through the spaces he has made within us. He sets them all down, the pieces he measured, sheared, and welded together in the evenings in his father's factory, while I, half hidden in among the machines, gathered up scrap fallen to the cement floor. The four beds stand in our shared room, one for each of us. With this, he fulfills his unwanted office. He leaves us soon after, and I keep vigil. Nightly, I allow not one of my brothers to speak or even audibly breathe. I know that the sound of any of our young voices will distract the light trying to make its way through the fitted substance of the metal. I know at the same time that this light is my father searching for his sons. He does not know it. Long before he left us, his love began traveling to us apart from him. If I memorize him, I will be able to see the love. If I cut from myself all that is not my love for him, the right set of rays will find us. My brothers fall asleep one by one. I lie and wait for my dream. There is no space not swirling, no fire with its core of blackness not burning within the bed's angular emptinesses because of the love meant for us. Through the night, the metal embraces me. It is a skeleton, unending silver, pure and cold. And I become it, the light of my father's love, arrived at last. I'll close with this one. Kathy, you were talking about wine. I have to tell you, once a few years ago, I tried to make blackberry wine. I don't know why. The first time around, I got really lucky. I produced six bottles of this beautiful just delicious blackberry wine. And it had a bit of alcohol in it. It must have been 8 or 10%, which is perfect. But it was completely beginner's luck because I had no idea what I was doing. I Googled blackberry wine. I tried out a recipe, blah, blah, blah. So I got ambitious the second August. And I tried to make like 30, 40 bottles of wine. And I got another recipe. I bought a whole bunch of stuff. And I really got professional about it. Anyway, it was a complete disaster. The stuff, I mean, it just tasted terrible. But I found a solution to it at Christmas time, the following Christmas time. I gave the stuff away to a whole bunch of friends and family members. And I said it was salad dressing. And I put ribbons around it and all this kind of stuff. And I got all these reports back, or these comments back, saying, where did you get this? I mean, it's just beautiful salad dressing. Try it on salmon, on all sorts of salads. It's just extraordinary. And so I ended up saying, well, yeah, I mean, no, I sort of developed this recipe for it. And, you know, I'm so glad you liked it, but it was a one-time deal, and I don't think you're ever going to get it again. And there's no place you can buy this kind of stuff. Anyway, it sort of produced a couple of poems. Here's one of them. I'll close with this. It's called Blackberry Wine. The moon in octagonal windows, twin portholes, passing silver over her half the couch long hair. All evening she bottled wine. Now she sleeps, her face a figure's on a prow. It must be that in her dreaming, the house is a sailing vessel filled with the scent of blackberries. The ship lifts anchor. The tide is with it. The wine of her is beginning to flow, and she is leading the ship, giving it life, and she is brewing the wine. The cache of ripe berries is stirred and crushed in boiling water, the mixture strained and stored, the juice poured into bottles and fine cloth fastened over the glass mouths, and the juice collapses its structure. All as she sails out into endless scent and transparent purple-black gloom. And it must be that in her dreaming she has searched for and found the ship's lost helmsman. If she awoke now, she would find her hair wine damp, and find the one she allowed to stand within her was one within whom she herself had always stood. The two of them out under the full sail of the invisible, in the moment of the wine steering through the wine. Thanks very much.